Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
Today, the tax code unfairly penalizes people who do not get health insurance through their job.
President Bush, from his Saturday radio address, previewing the big new health insurance proposal expected in his State of the Union speech tonight, a new tax on the health insurance you get at work if that insurance plan is too good, to fund a tax deduction for people who buy insurance on their own. Here's the problem the president sees with the current tax code.
It unwisely encourages workers to choose overly expensive gold-plated plans. The result is that insurance premiums rise and many Americans cannot afford the coverage they need. We need to fix these problems, and one way to do so is to treat health insurance more like home ownership.
Presumably, we'll hear more in the State of the Union tonight. We will air that live at 9 o'clock on AM 820 WNYC. But Democrats and others are already ripping the proposal as an attack on the very existence of employer-provided health insurance. And today's New York Times says the president's plan would also take money away from New York City's public hospitals, a pride and joy of Mayor Bloomberg, he says, to redistribute it to individuals to help them buy private insurance rather than rely on public institutions. So let's debate the president's proposal, or at least what we know of it. Two views now from Dr. David Gratzer, a physician, a fellow at the Manhattan Institute think tank, and author of a new book called The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare. And Dr. Steffi Woolhandler, also a physician, co-director of the Harvard University Medical School General Internal Medicine Fellowship Program, and an advocate, ideally, of government single-payer health insurance. Thanks to both of you for coming back on WNYC today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Gratzer, you're the supporter of the president's idea here, so can you explain further what he's getting at about the tax system and why you think he's right?
Sure. Briefly, to take a step back, American healthcare insurance is really built on an accidental system. During the Second World War, FDR implemented wage and price controls, and we all remember what were the consequences of price controls, people queuing for gasoline and other things. Wage controls actually had a similarly profound effect on the economy, though perhaps a little bit less on the radar screen, so to speak. Employers wanted to attract new employees or better employees, and they could no longer offer them better wages. And so in the early 1940s, they started to offer people better benefit packages, in particular health insurance, which previously employers really hadn't been offering before. And that took off. And in 1943, October 23rd to be precise, the IRS ruled that they could do that they could offer health benefits in pre-tax dollars, so it was not a taxable benefit. They had to get codified by the IRS in 1954 and really gives rise to the health insurance system we have in the United States, where most Americans get their health insurance from their employer or their spouse's employer. That's an accidental system. In some ways, it works well. Most Americans have coverage. Most Americans actually are satisfied with their coverage. Most Americans get pretty good medical care. On the other hand, it's a pretty unsatisfying system in a variety of ways. If you were a freelance photographer or a freelance journalist, you'll actually have to pay for health insurance done pre-tax dollars, like employers do, but in post-tax dollars. As well, if you switch jobs, you often lose your health insurance and so on. So to go back to the president's plan, and again, we've just really received snippets so far, and obviously when we hear the State of the Union address tonight and in coming weeks when he clarifies things, essentially what he's saying is, look, there are two problems here. First of all, a lot of people, don't get any sort of tax benefit whatsoever, tax break whatsoever, if they're individually employed. We're going to correct that. From here on in, you do get a basic deduction for health insurance. So if you're a freelance photographer or a freelance journalist, to cite those two examples I had mentioned before, now you'll get a bit of a break, which might reduce health insurance premiums anywhere from 10 to 30%, depending on people's brackets. He also says, look, some people are doing unusually well. This is an accidental system. In a way, it's a tax loophole. And the people who tend to do the best on this system are the people who earn the most money. In fact, the people who get the biggest tax break of all, according to a Health Affairs article, are people earning more than $100,000 a year.
They're the ones likely to get the best health insurance plans.
They're the ones who get the best health insurance, and because of their brackets and so on, they actually get 10 times more of a tax break off this system than somebody earning $10,000 a year to $20,000 a year.
All right, let me stop there for the moment. Sure. and throw it to Dr. Wilhandler. Is the president at least right on the unfairness that he uses as his starting point that Dr. Gratzer was just describing, that health insurance you get from an employer can be given tax-free or pre-tax, whereas health insurance you buy as an individual has to come from your after-tax income?
Well, that's true, but we have a broken healthcare finance system. We don't have some minor tax problem that you can fix by fiddling with tax deductions. Giving a big tax credit to people is not going to fix the system. What it is going to do is give some money to the wealthy for whom a tax credit is worth a lot because they're in a high bracket. It's not going to do anything for most of the uninsured, who, in fact, are very low-income people, and even if they get a tax credit, they get very, very little money back. Just to give you an example, you know, the president would give everybody every family a $15,000 tax credit. That's worth $5,400 to a very rich family. That's $5,400 that taxpayers are giving back to that rich family through $15,000 tax credit. That same $15,000 tax credit for a poor uninsured family is only worth about $147. So by using the tax system to try to change policy, what Bush is doing is really saying there's going to be much more money taken out of the federal treasury and given to rich people than to poor people. So this is really tax policy. I think it's bad tax policy, but what we need is health policy. We need a policy to make sure everybody gets health insurance. It needs to be comprehensive. It needs to be universal, and every other developed country but the United States has said national health insurance.
So to stay for the moment on the tax policy question, Dr. Gratzer, when we talk about tax deductions, Dr. Wilhandler is saying you have to make enough money to pay income taxes, and a lot of the uninsured are people who are struggling financially in lower tax brackets. So would people with higher incomes get a bigger tax subsidy for the same insurance policy, and would many who need it the most not benefit much at all because they're in the lowest tax brackets?
Well, she makes really two points, right? First is it doesn't help the uninsured. Secondly, it's unfair to the wealthy. I mean, it's unfair because it gives a break to the wealthy. I'll disagree with both points. Undoubtedly, there are uninsured who are very low income. But there are also a lot of uninsured people who have simply fallen through the cracks in this system. Roughly about a third of the uninsured, according to a Blue Cross Blue Shield study released in 2003 based on CBO numbers, have family incomes $50,000 or higher. So in other words, they're people who are often self-employed, and the tax system sets a bar there, and as a result, they choose not to get health insurance. I would like them to get health insurance. I think we all would. I'd like to make it easier for them, and so I'd like to stop penalizing them with the tax system. The second point Professor Wilhandler raises is this. This unfairly helps the wealthy because it's tax policy. Well, the present system unfairly helps the wealthy. As I was alluding to before she made her comments, under the present system, the people who get the biggest break with an employer tax exclusion, to use the technical term, are people earning $100,000 or more a year. They're getting 10 times more money than the people earning $10,000 to $20,000. So the present system is regressive, to use the technical term. The wealthier you are, the better you do. This new system, actually, that the president is proposing will help the average American worker far more than the old system in that we have a standard deduction, which means that most people are actually going to get money back. About 80% of American workers are going to get more money in their pocket. It's a bit of a tax cut for them. Who is going to get penalized on this new system? Well, the people with the more elaborate, more lavish, or to use the president's words, gold-plated plans, which tend to be the wealthier Americans. Look, this isn't a perfect system. Professor Wohlhandler and I agree on very little. Maybe we'll agree on this much. Healthcare is a big mess and will require all sorts of things to fix it. But I think what the president is proposing is not a particularly right-wing idea or a left-wing idea, but it's saying, look, this is an accidental system that rises out of wage controls in the Second World War. It penalizes some Americans just because their boss didn't provide them with health insurance. Let's correct it.
Well, let me follow up on one aspect of that, because your book is about how capitalism can save American healthcare. That's the title. Is the president's proposal anti-capitalist in the sense that it's slapping a new tax on a fringe benefit that employers can now use in the marketplace to lure good workers?
No, it's about tax fairness. It's about saying the following. Look, every when people are given compensation, they have to pay tax on it, right? If your employer offers you a $1,000 raise, you'll have to pay tax on that. But for historical reasons, when you're given $1,000 more of health insurance, you don't pay tax on that. And that's good to a point. I mean, we can all agree that more Americans should have health insurance. If we can make it a little bit cheaper in the marketplace, that's not a bad idea. But we're saying some companies have taken this too far, and health insurance has become, in a sense, disguised income. And we're saying, look, a certain amount, we can all agree, is reasonable as a deduction. But beyond that point, gold-plated plans, to use the president's words, ought to be taxed to some extent.
Is that the case, by the way? Is that the case? One second, Dr. Wohlhandler. Is that the case with all fringe benefits right now? Are we taxed on vacation days or pension benefits if we're in company pension plans? Do you know, Dr. Gratzer?
My understanding is most benefits my understanding is some benefits are taxed and some are not. Health insurance premiums are taxed. Are not taxed. Other health expenses, in fact, might be.
Dr. Wohlhandler?
Well, there's this myth of the gold-plated private health insurance policy. I mean, who out there thinks their private health insurance is too good? In fact, most people's private health insurance is full of gaps, co-payments, deductibles, uncovered services, such that when they face a serious illness, they can go into bankruptcy even if they have private health insurance. In our studies of medical bankruptcy, it turned out that more than three-quarters of people who were forced into bankruptcy by an illness or medical bills had health insurance at the onset of the illness that bankrupted them. So insured Americans have a problem, too. Private health insurance is actually a defective product in this country, and tinkering with the tax system, robbing Peter to pay Paul, is not going to fix the fundamental fact that the private health insurance system is broken.
We're talking about President Bush's health insurance proposals expected in the State of the Union address tonight, including a tax incentive for people who buy health insurance plans privately and a new tax on people who get employer-provided plans that are too good. And we can take your phone calls on this at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. And we'll also get into the potential effects on New York City's hospitals, as written up in the New York Times today. My guests, Dr. David Gratzer from the Manhattan Institute and Dr. Steffi Wohlhandler from Harvard. Just to follow up on what you were saying, Dr. Wohlhandler, how good would health insurance have to be to get hit with this tax? Do we have any clues yet?
How good? Well, the only people who are paying $15,000 a year for health insurance are people who are sick. Okay, so if you're, 63 years old and have a chronic illness, and
that's the cutoff. Though your employer-provided plan has to be worth $15,000 a year
Before it gets taxed under this. So, most working people tend to be from healthier families, and the average price of health insurance through an employer is in the $9,000 or $10,000 range.
Does that include family coverage?
That would be family coverage. $15,000 policies through employers are rare as hen's teeth, and the reason they exist is because there happen to be older people in the workforce, older families but not yet eligible for Medicare, or very sick people. So that's mostly who's going to get hit with this tax on policies above $15,000.
Dr. Gratzer, do you agree with that analysis?
No, it's nonsense.
Nonsense. That's what the numbers are, sir.
Let him talk. Dr. Grasser, go ahead.
Professor Wohlhander, very civil when you speak. I would ask the same. No, in fact, most people receive their coverage from their employers, and as a result, their employer pays the bulk of the premium, and it works out for an average family plan to be about $10,000, actually slightly less.
That's exactly what I just said.
Dr. Wohlhander, hang on. Yeah. Go ahead, Dr.
What does that mean under the president's plan? Since the president's plan allows the tax deduction up to $15,000, it means that most workers in America, as I alluded to before, will actually get a bit of a tax break. Who has plans more lavish than that? As I pointed out before, is not the chronically ill and so on. Again, there's group pooling that goes on, particularly with large companies.
So who is paying? So who's paying these premiums over $15,000?
It tends to be in company plans, people who have more lavish benefit packages, people are of higher income. I mean, just to go back to your standard plans, again, if you have a deductible, if you have a copay, which most people do, you're looking at an average expenditure of about $10,000. So really the president's plan says, look, you get even more of a deduction, which means you get 80% of workers will get a tax break on this.
Okay. So, but the tax break is based on how high your income is. So, yes, you'll get a tiny tax break if you're the janitor and a huge tax break if you're the CEO with the same health insurance plan.
Well, there's something here I don't understand. If you're any worker who is covered by health insurance, you're not getting any tax break at all, right? You're only getting a tax break under this proposal if you are not covered by health insurance and you go out and buy it individually. Am I wrong?
My understanding is if your insurance plan only costs $10,000, you'll still get the full $15,000 tax credit.
Oh.
And that extra $5,000 is worth a lot of money.
Would come to you
if you're rich, but not if you're poor.
Brian, you do get a tax break. Okay, so you're quite right. If you are self-employed, okay, you're that freelance journalist I keep alluding to, who I seem to have a lot of empathy toward, you all of a sudden will be able to write off your insurance premium, which is a lot of money in the bank, right? You're probably looking at a reduction in that premium, depending on your, how much you're making, you know, 20-30% potentially, 10-20%. On the other hand, if you're covered by a company plan, this is a deduction, and since most people pay less, or their employer, rather, pays less for their premium, the president says it's a standardized deduction, which means, yeah, you do get a little bit of a tax break at the end of the year.
Okay. We're going to take a break. Not a tax break, just an announcement break, and then we'll continue with Dr. Grasser and Dr. Wohlhander. We'll talk about how this might affect New York City in particular, and we'll take some of your phone calls and emails. Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org, our email address. Stay with us.
Current tax code encourages home ownership by allowing you to deduct the interest on your mortgage from your taxes. We can reform the tax code so that it provides a similar incentive for you to buy health insurance.
One of the goals that I will be presenting, as I said this afternoon, is health insurance for every child and universal health care for every American.
President Bush, again from his Saturday radio address, previewing the health insurance tax changes he's expected to propose in the State of the Union address tonight, followed by Senator Hillary Clinton on the day after she announced for president. Speaking to reporters, we are debating the president's proposals or what we know of them so far, a tax incentive for people to buy private insurance, a tax hike on people whose insurance is too good if employer provided, with Dr. David Grasser, a physician, a fellow at the Manhattan Institute think tank, and author of The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare, and Dr. Steffi Wohlhander, also a physician, co-director of the Harvard Medical School General Internal Medicine Fellowship Program, and an advocate, ideally, of government single-payer health insurance. And Barbara in Old Capon, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how's everyone doing?
Good.
This idea of gold-plated health plans, I think, is a bit of a myth. Years ago, we used to have something called the executive plan, where the company just paid for all your health care. You could have plastic surgery or I had my teeth capped. No questions asked, and it was not taxable. And the government figured that out, and they decided to make every company give every employee the same benefit, or if they gave a special benefit, that would be taxable. So those are gone. Executive plans are gone. As far as whether or not self-employed people can deduct their own premiums, I believe the gentleman is wrong about that. I believe that if you are self-employed, you have a tremendous amount of available deductions. The problem is that you don't get the same rate that a company gets. I pay $20,000 a year for a family plan that a company will pay $7,000 or $8,000 for. And lastly,
so you do this now? You buy health insurance for your family as an individual?
I have a small company, two employees, and as such, I'm entitled to have a small company health care plan, which is an outrageous amount of money.
So you get a tax deduction or no on this?
Yes, my company deducts
because
that.
It's a company expense, not an individual expense.
That's
I guess.
Correct.
Okay, Dr. Gratzer, do you want to respond to Barbara?
Well, she does actually have a company plan. It's just a smaller company, as most companies in America are. The issue would be if she were a consultant or she were self-employed, she wouldn't get any tax deduction whatsoever. And that's simply rising out of FDR's wage controls, and I think that's unfair. The president is seeking to address that. Now, she also does raise another point, which is that small companies, particularly companies in states like New York and Massachusetts and other northeastern states, tend to pay quite a bit for health insurance, far more than large companies because they're not bound by state regulations, and sometimes even more than individuals would. And that, again, has to do with regulations and tax policy, but largely with regulations that one sees in New York. I talk about that in my book, The Cure. I think that health insurance tends to be overregulated in America, and as a result, you can't buy a no-frills plan. It tends to cover a lot and raises prices accordingly. In contrast, if she were to try and buy that same small business plan in Connecticut, she would pay a fraction of what she's paying now. So look, the president's plan doesn't address that in any way, shape, or form. Still lots of problems, but I think this is some tax fairness in that if you're in the individual market, you don't get any deduction right now. If you're in the small group market or in the large group business market, you do get some sort of a deduction. Again, lots of problems to resolve here, but this is a step in the right direction.
I'd like to talk about part of why health insurance costs are so high, which is administrative costs. The administrative costs on private health insurance average 12-13%. Some of the large HMOs like Cigna sometimes have overhead costs of 22%, which means for every dollar you give them as premium, only 78 cents ever comes out as money for doctors, hospitals, nurses, or drugs. And 22 cents on every dollar stays right there with Cigna or the health insurance company for their overhead and profits. And, of course, that overhead is even higher in the individual market. If you go out as an individual and try to buy health insurance, the overhead alone on that insurance can run 35 or 45%. You have to contrast that with public insurance programs. Even our own Medicare program runs for overhead of about 3%. So, you know, just a fraction of the administrative waste you see in private health insurance. And Canadian-style national health insurance runs for overhead around 1%. So the idea of national health insurance is you get rid of that administrative overhead, you get huge administrative savings, probably about $300 billion a year in the United States by cutting out the middleman, and then you have that extra money to cover the uninsured and fill the gaps in coverage for people now.
So, Dr. Gratzer, if the president's concern is to find the money, the waste in the system, that could be used to cover more of the uninsured, why look only at the quality plans that some people are getting and tax them, providing a disincentive to provide them, rather than looking at some of this bloat in the private healthcare system, unless you don't think it exists?
Well, I don't quite accept Professor Wohlhandler's numbers. Undoubtedly, there are more administrative costs with private insurance plans than public insurance plans. I mean, that just only makes sense. Medicare just writes checks, effectively, right? They don't track people's health. They don't try and manage people's health the way some private companies do. I also think that there are some inherent structural problems. And on this point, I think Professor Wohlhandler and I actually do see eye to eye with an employer-based system. People change jobs, and as a result, insurance companies do actual aerial calculations on a year-to-year basis, which tends to be a little bit wasteful. That said, I don't think one can fairly say 35% of expenses are administrative. But look, even if
that's
you accept...
In the individual market, that's true.
Okay.
Individual.
At best, it would be an estimate. But like,
all right, but you're agreeing on the fact that private plans are less efficient.
Okay. But I think at this point in time, we're not going to see an abolition of private insurance the way Professor Wohlhandler would like. We're not going to see a Canadian-style system in the United States. She would think that's a pity. Having been born and raised in Canada, I would respectfully disagree. All that being said, given the system we have now and given the problems we have now, what are intelligent reforms you can do that isn't these type of sweeping proposals? And I think the president's plan of saying, look, let's have some tax fairness is a step in the right direction. He proposes other things that I think are worth discussing and I think are steps in the right direction as well.
Mary Beth in Red Bank, you're on WNYC.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on a few things. First of all, my husband and I make an income that your gentleman guest was referring to as being, more in the wealthy class. And I have to tell you, living in metropolitan New York, we consider ourselves to be solidly middle class. So I think that you have to rethink the numbers relative to where you're living. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that I faced catastrophic illness a couple of years ago, and my husband has a fabulous insurance plan through his company. We contribute to that. There's money taken out of his check every other week as his employee contribution that totals over $6,000 a year. When I was facing my illness, which was breast cancer, I had over $15,000 in out-of-pocket expenses in addition to that $6,000 that we paid. And the other thing that I wanted to make everybody aware of is that in my experience, and maybe it's because I was going to New York for treatment, but most of the doctors that I saw who are considered some of the best, I guess, in the world, flat out don't accept insurance. And they would say, we don't accept insurance. So whatever works between you and your insurance company is between you. But you are going to face this bill at the end, and you are obligated to pay it. And you have to sign a series of contracts before they'll even work with you. And I just think that all of these things have to be considered when you're talking about a gold-plated plan, because I think that on paper it may look like a gold-plated plan, but when you're facing surgery and treatment and illness and tons of dollars plus the expense of living your life, not only are you not wealthy, but you're not really very well covered.
Dr. Gratzer?
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
I think probably the caller, like most Americans, has a plan that costs about $10,000 a year. When we say gold-plated, we're referring to plans that are in excess of $15,000 a year.
But can I follow up and ask you a question about that number?
Sure.
Because if it's not indexed for inflation, then the average price of plan, given how fast healthcare premiums are going up, is going to hit $15,000 in just a few years. Even if this, if the president's proposal passes, and in fact, I think it's higher than $10,000 a year on average in the New York metropolitan area. So even with your numbers, it sounds like we might be very close to the average family plan being considered a taxable gold-plated plan in just a few years. What do you think?
Well, health insurance premiums grew about 7% this year. So to go from 10,000 to 15,000 will take a lot of years.
Within a decade.
Yeah, we also don't know if they're going to index or not. I mean, now we're starting to haggle over details and project into the future. I don't think you can do that based on a handful of speaking notes that the president has spoken off of. I mean, she also alludes to other problems, which I'm sensitive to. I mean, more and more doctors are frustrated with the insurance system. They're frustrated with the paperwork and leave it up to individuals. I think people in New York probably are more sensitive to that because there are probably fewer insurance companies, and frankly, there seem to be a little bit less dynamic in their approach. That has to do with more state regulations than anything else. I think we need more competition amongst insurers in New York and elsewhere.
But, Mary Beth's main problem is really typical of the system. That is, when she faced an expensive illness, her private health insurance really failed her. And even though she'd played by the rules, she'd bought good insurance, she paid her premiums, when she faced illness, she's taking $15,000 out of her own pocket for health care. And I'm glad Mary Beth and her family were able to survive that. But for many American families, that means bankruptcy, particularly if a breadwinner can't go to work because of an illness. That's why medical illness and medical bills contribute to half of U.S. bankruptcies, and the majority of people who enter medical bankruptcy have insurance. The health insurance system isn't working. We need to go to a form of national health insurance that doesn't just cover everyone, but covers you comprehensively. There's no co-payments, no deductibles for covered services. You never hit a lifetime limit. If you need $2 million worth of care for your cancer, that's all paid. The other thing with national health insurance is you have complete free choice of doctors and hospitals. So if you want to go to the high-cost specialist in Toronto, you go there. I'm not saying anything's perfect with national health insurance, but it definitely provides a much better financial and medical safety net than the broken private health insurance system we have here.
Let me respond to that? Go ahead, real briefly, and I want to bring in the New York Public Hospitals question.
Sure. Careful what you wish for. I mean, Professor Wohlhandler is masterful at explaining that you could have the exact system you have now without any additional bills if you look to Canada. I was born and raised in Canada. There are long waits for practically any type of care. It's true somebody like Mary Jane would not face the sort of huge financial burden she had faced in the United States, though $15,000 for life-saving treatment might not be so big in the overall scheme of things for most families. But, you know, cancer outcomes are better in the United States than they are in Canada or in Europe.
So you also have to acknowledge, don't you?
That's not my data, it's WHO data. So, so be careful what you wish for on your way to a single-payer system. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a bargain isn't such a good deal.
Okay. But Dr. Glotzer's statement that long waits for any type of care is simply not true. There are waits for a handful of high-technology services. I don't endorse waits, but the waits exist because they're spending half as much per capita as we are in healthcare in Canada. They've got a good system, they're just not spending enough. We're spending enough. We're spending plenty in this country. We've just got a broken finance system. So a Canadian-style system with the U.S. level of spending would be kind of Canada deluxe. Their access to care, their financial protection, their free choice, but with no waits for any services.
We have a few more minutes to discuss President Bush's health insurance proposals that he will probably detail in his State of the Union address tonight with Dr. David Gratzer, a physician, fellow at the Manhattan Institute think tank, author of The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare, and Dr. Steffi Wohlhandler from the Harvard School of Medicine, also a physician and an advocate, ideally, of government single-payer health insurance. Today's New York Times, Dr. Wohlhandler, says, as the president's plan tries to shift insurance costs to individuals, it would take money away from hospitals, including New York City public hospitals, which Mayor Bloomberg considers a pride and joy accomplishment, to have that extra money to shift to individuals. Do you understand how that part of the plan would work and what impact it would have?
Well, the major impact would be to weaken the public hospitals, which do serve as a safety net for people who don't have insurance.
Is the president not right to want to try to have people rely less on public hospitals for anything other than emergencies and try to shift money into the hands of individuals so that they can afford private health insurance?
Okay. What he's doing is absolutely wrong because he's going to weaken the existing safety net before he provides another one. And first of all, these tax fiddlings are not going to get a lot of people health insurance. There's just not enough money there to make health insurance affordable for poor people by fiddling with the tax system. He's going to weaken the public hospitals, which are the existing safety net. Not perfect, but they do provide a safety net. If you weaken them and you don't put anything in their place, a lot of people are going to be worse off, not just uninsured people, but other folks who do rely on hospitals in real emergencies.
Dr. Gratzer, what would this plan put in the place of the money that goes to the New York City public hospitals today? Is it clear to you?
Absolutely. It would put in place some system of allowing uninsured people, particularly low-income uninsured people, to gain private insurance. Look, this is no different.
How?
Because they're looking at allowing states to be allowed to experiment exactly the same way Massachusetts did, where liberal Democrats and conservative Republicans got together and said, look, we don't want to spend money on hospitals and on the hospital bureaucracy. We'll put money and thus private insurance into the hands of those who are not covered, and they can make their own treatment decisions. This is basically saying what Massachusetts did, and it took them a long time to get through all those federal regulations, other states will be allowed to do. Again, not not a left-right issue. We're saying we're going to spend the money, okay? We're going to spend the money on the uninsured. We're just not going to spend it on bureaucracy. We're going to turn the money over to them, and they can get a private insurance plan. And if they choose to go to those state hospitals...
Well, you say turn the money over to them. What, is the money that's being taken out of the New York City public hospitals going to be given as vouchers to the uninsured?
No, it's going to be turned over to state governments to decide to do what they want to do with it. And some state governments, probably not New York, but some state governments like Massachusetts has done, like Schwarzenegger is proposing in California, will say, look, we're going to, instead of just spending it on hospitals, we're going to turn it over to the uninsured, and they can choose from, say, a menu of options of private insurance, and then they can be insured. And
so they're going to take money from the city and give it to the state, you're saying?
Exactly. Well, they're going to take money from the hospital system and turn it over to the state governments and say, if you want to continue to fund the hospital system, you can. If you want to try another approach to helping the uninsured, you have that flexibility.
Dr. Wilhander, we're almost out of time, but why isn't that a good thing if the states have been the innovative laboratories in healthcare policy while the federal government has not acted?
Okay. I don't think the states have made major innovations. I don't think the Massachusetts bill is going to improve care in the state. I think it's frankly a hoax, so I would not say that's an important innovation. What they're talking about is taking money out of the health system, which is hospitals, and handing over to the states who may or may not use that money for a real safety net. You can't destroy the safety net we have until you're sure there's some other safety net available to people. And that's really the problem with this proposal. They're taking money out of a faulty safety net, but at least it's a safety net, and it really throwing it to the mercy of state governments who may do something useful and may just waste it.
Dr. Steffi Wilhandler, Dr. David Gratzer, thank you both very much for having this conversation. We'll see what the president actually comes up with tonight in the State of the Union. Thank you both again.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
And we will carry President Bush's State of the Union address live at 9 o'clock tonight on AM 820 WNYC. We'll also get reactions from four guests and you on the phone here tomorrow morning. Our guest tomorrow, John Fund from the Wall Street Journal editorial page, former New Jersey Governor Christy Whitman, the head of the union, SEIU, and their big coalition, Andy Stern, and linguist George Lakoff. So a lot of reactions to the State of the Union tomorrow, including yours, and live coverage tonight at 9. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.